I don't think I get it. What happened?
You get it all right, you just can't handle it. Your stocking has just been teleported from one pod to another, disintegrated there and reintegrated there. Sort of. It'll change the world as we know it, right?
Laugh, you butterfly that dances in the mud. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
This episode of Film Sack is brought to you in part by GoDaddy.com. Use Frog1 at checkout, that's F-R-O-G-1, and save money on that .com domain today at GoDaddy.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to yet another episode of Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 28, and this is the show where we take obscure, lovable movies from the past, typically, and we talk about them right here on this show. I am Scott Johnson, and I'm joined this week by Randy Jordan.
Hey, Scott, you know, I just laid back on my sofa bed, and I got this computer chip I lost embedded into my back. Don't you hate it when that happens?
Yes, it's the worst. I hate it more when it happens to you, though, than me. Also with us is Mr. Brian Dunaway. Brian, hello.
Yes, it would appear I should have spent less time on the voice recognition software for the telepods and more time on transmitting organic matter.
it was pretty damn good, though. For the time. Yeah. Wow. 86 and all. And then bringing up the rear this week, we have Brian Ibbett.
Okay, so I've got this great new invention. It is a half plate, half steak. I call it Plake.
Oh, man.
I get it because the brundle fly.
Get it. Yeah. Once again, Brian Ibbett bringing the pain each and every week on this episode of Film Sack. So you might be saying to yourselves, I think I kind of know what that movie is. Let's clear it up for you right now.
The Fly. While testing his teleportation device, scientist Seth Brundle, played by Jeff Goldblum, accidentally merges his cells with those of a housefly. As his reporter girlfriend, played by Gina Davis, bears witness, Seth slowly and quite disgustingly morphs into an insect. David Cronenberg's 1986 remake of the Vincent Price original achieves the unlikely concoction of horror, romance, and pathos, thanks largely to Goldblum's strangely touching performance.
Indeed. So this is not the first time we've tried to talk about The Fly. We talked about the 1953 edition of The Fly right here on the show not many episodes ago. Was it 53? Mm-hmm. I don't remember. What was the year?
58. 56?
Was it 50? Yeah. Screw it.
They're two films separated by 30-odd years.
There. Yeah. That is a perfect way to say it. So very different take this time around from our friend David Cronenberg, which he is known for doing. And personally, I love it, and I can't wait to talk about why I love it. We'll get to that in a minute. This was directed by David Cronenberg, of course. Writers were George Langlian and Charles Edward Pogue, New York Times technology reviewer and writer. Just kidding. Not really. I don't know who that guy is.
Is it Pew or is it Pew?
Isn't it Pogue? Wouldn't you say Pogue?
I thought it was Pew.
I don't think it's Pew. But you may be right. Born in March of 1943, David Cronenberg is famous for other stuff like The Dead Zone, Videodrome, Scanners, The Brood. I have a feeling we may see another one of his movies on this podcast.
Sure. And we actually may see The Fly remake again.
Yeah.
Cronenberg is talking about that.
And him being involved.
Yes.
Like doing it again. The guy might be obsessed, I think, with The Fly.
So most of the movies that we talk about on Film Sack are strangely being made anew. Yeah. This would be the first one that we've ever done two different episodes on that would be made anew.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And the first one maybe ever that will have maybe the same director doing it anew.
Weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, since he did...
It was the first one, by the way.
Oh. Oh, he did? Oh, that... Really?
Yeah.
50. Okay, I had that way off. So he's done a bunch of stuff as director. The strangest thing I ever saw him do was Naked Lunch. Anyone remember that with Peter Weller?
Oh, yeah. Oh, the movie.
Yeah. What'd you think of that, Randy? You're a fan of weird cinema. What'd you think of Naked Lunch?
It's not that weird. It's got just a bunch of these tremendous little performances by like Ian Holm, who was Bilbo Baggins in the Lord of the Rings movies. And Roy Scheider's in that film. Yeah. He's fantastic.
Yeah,
I like it. It's not an important movie. But it's good.
It's got RoboCop in it.
Oh.
So there's that. Tyler. He also directed one episode of 1998's attempt at a television version of Friday the 13th.
Remember that show?
I do too. He directed one of those. Weird as hell. Dead Ringers, and then my favorite thing he's done recently, A History of Violence in 2005.
Oh, that's David Cronenberg.
Great.
Yeah, great movie.
Yeah, love that movie.
Based on a comic book.
He's really gotten into this groove lately. His most recent, I mean, really great film is Eastern Promises.
Yeah.
And you can tell that in his later years, Cronenberg is serious about making good movies. He's not jumping around and making, you know, movies like Dead Ringers anymore.
No. But I enjoyed that time for him. He's working on something now called The Dangerous Method with Keira Knightley and Viggo Mortensen. I don't know what that's about yet. But more importantly, in 2007, he did something called Chacun son cinéma, une cette petite coupe à cour, grande el lumière, cette heure qui le film commence. And that's for real. And he did the segment called At the Suicide of the Last Jew in the World, and in the last cinema in the world. So, AKA to each his own cinema.
Yeah, and apparently there wasn't enough room left on the poster for any artwork. It was all just title.
No, dude. That's like the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, and then repeat that three times.
That's what happens when you have Fiona Apple write your movie titles for you.
It's interesting that Cronenberg's making a fourth Viggo Mortensen film, and then there's an Eastern Promises sequel supposedly coming.
Yeah,
because Viggo Mortensen is not terribly different from Jeff Goldblum. They have a lot in common in how they behave in front of the camera.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't really thought of that comparison, but I think you're right. They have similar vibe.
Yeah,
for sure. What's interesting about A Dangerous Method is this is supposedly after freaking Viggo says he's out of movies. He's done. So maybe this is his last thing in development or something. I don't know.
You shouldn't have an Eastern Promises sequel without Viggo Mortensen.
True. True that. He also did Crash, that terrible movie about people that are way into like doing it after they crash in a car. Remember that thing?
Confused with the other movie called Crash. Yeah, this was the one with Bill Pullman. The other movie that was called Crash with Terrence Howard and
the social commentary one.
That was right. No one was doing it in that one after the car crash.
No, that one was more like, hey, look at our society and let's take a deep look at ourselves. The other one was like, dude, I just crashed my car. Let's do it. Stupid. Anyway, enough about
him. That was a David Lynch thing too, wasn't it? David Lynch and... wrote it, and David Cronenberg.
Oh, was that the deal? All those guys hang out?
I don't know. The Cronenberg Crash was based on a novel by J.G. Ballard.
Oh, whoever that is.
And the other Crash, I can't recall.
The other Crash was...
the one that won all the Oscars.
Yeah. The one that had everybody in it.
I thought David Lynch was involved with the sex crash one.
Oh, you're thinking of Lest Lost crash. Highway. Are you thinking
that's
of that?
That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah. Never mind. Okay.
Weird movie, that. Anyway... So enough about Cronenberg. I just think he's an interesting director and has a lot of interesting influence. He was also an actor for a couple of episodes of Alias, and I'll never forget his role as this weird doctor. He was really great. Does a lot of acting as well. Of course, Jeff Goldblum, Gina Davis, John Getz, to name a few of the people that are in this movie. And, of course, David Cronenberg played the gynecologist when she gave birth to a worm.
In a dream.
In a dream. Sorry, I should clarify that. Spoiler, it's a dream.
And you say, and it's funny, you say, just to name a few, you pretty much named all of the people who have a speaking role in this film.
Yeah, there's like one or two lines for the people from the bar.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Right. Well, there's the horny chick, Joy Bouchel. Tawny.
Yeah, Tawny.
Yeah. Who else? That's it.
The guy who sells her a tie, I think.
Most of the rest are in that dream Randy referred to. Which is kind of funny. A little bit of trivia. David Cronenberg, originally the project was for Tim Burton to direct. We hear this a lot. Yeah, it seems like Tim Burton's tied to a lot of things. And I don't know if I trust the sources on this, but I checked around and there were three or four sources supporting this idea that Tim Burton was originally was going to direct the film, and that Michael Keaton was offered the role of Seth Brundle and declined.
I'm so glad. Yeah, oh my gosh.
It would have been a totally different movie.
You know, it would have been different, but I kind of like went, that's offensive to me, you know, to hear that Keaton maybe have been this guy. But then I thought about it. He could probably do this. Like, he'd be shorter. No. He could do it.
Oh, my guy turn into a fly, or a fly turn into a guy.
I don't know.
Mr. Mom Fly.
I mean,
Mr. Mom Fly.
I mean, it seems like he has the way. I don't know. I think he could. I think he could have pulled it off.
So this would have been another Gina Davis vehicle.
Oh yeah, another Gina Davis.
This would have been Beetlejuice.
Yeah,
yeah.
She was looking very Skeletorish. I thought she looked great.
Actually, she looked better in this one than
she did. She's 6 foot one, and I figured out what it is. It's her mouth. Something's wrong with her mouth.
Oh.
It's her mouth. Her lips are odd.
You like her a lot, don't you?
Oh yeah.
She's in a league of her own, you think?
Yeah,
that's a good one.
That was about the end of it for me. I mean, she got a little too skinny after League of Their Own. Was Thelma and Louise?
That was 91, 92. That was later, much later.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was League of Their Own was about the time I said, okay, yeah, all right, that's about as good as she's going to get. And
oh my gosh.
She went on to play the president.
Stuart Little.
Oh, Stuart Little. Yeah. The Stuart Little movie. She was hot.
the main reason why you put Gina Davis in this film, right?
Or any movie. Why is that?
Because Jeff Goldblum is so tall.
Oh, and that's
so
true.
Is she.
Yeah. That's true.
And so you don't have to put her in you know, elevator shoes to film shots of them side by side.
Yeah. Plus, they were married, right? At this time, this is when they were married,
I believe. They had great chemistry on screen.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember if this is how they met each other before they got married, or if they were married before this. I think this is how they met, isn't it?
There were movies before this together. And let's just take a look real quick because, damn it, we're on the internet. And let's see.
I think that really translated to the screen, though. I mean, their chemistry on scene and on screen, whichever one you want to call it, was great.
Transylvania 65,000, they were together.
Oh, they were. Okay.
So they met, they got together, but they didn't get married until after they made The Fly.
Yes, correct. And I did not know Gina Davis was in Fletch. Color me surprised.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Or in Riptide, or Family Ties, or any of those.
The budding reporter that really you only see her in the newsroom every once in a while. She comes in. She doesn't go out in the field and solve anything with Chevy Chase. She's just kind of comic relief inside the newsroom.
Her second role ever, bit part on Knight Rider. Actually, that's the helicopter movie show thing.
That's Airwolf.
I knew it when I started doing it. Anyways.
That's what you're thinking of.
Yeah, that's what I meant. So, anyway, so that's who we have.
The Horseshack song?
The what? Who? What? When? The Horseshack? What? I heard that wrong. I thought you said the Horseshack song. What? Who?
What?
Huh? So, so this was let me get back to some of this trivia. Interesting, Mel Brooks was a chief producer on it but did not go credited as such because, quote, didn't want people to know he was a producer of the film because he thought people would not take it seriously if they knew he was involved. When people did find out, he decided to make the most of it by handing out deep boppers at the premiere. Or Dealey Boppers.
Dealey Boppers. Those little head things with the their spring things you put on your head. They've got springs and then a ball at the end. It looks like you've got antenna.
Oh, like your fly antennas. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Or iTenna.
iTenna. That's a new Apple model.
I know. Coming out in June. I just leaked it. And was the first theatrical theme to have its broadcast premiere on Fox Television Network, which was relatively new at the time. So that's interesting. That being said, this all sounds like a long time ago, 1986. Should have aged quite a bit. I found myself shocked at how well it's lit, shot, acted, and special effectatized. Is that a word?
So are those your categories you're going with?
Yes. I think it won that year for special effectitude.
And you know why you say that, Scott?
Why?
It's because this film has no visual effects. They kept it very, very simple. They used simple tricks like filling the pod with smoke and then opening it and letting the smoke just spill out so you don't have to see what's going on in there.
Like Jeff Goldblum's wiener. Is that what you mean?
Exactly.
Mm. Yep.
It was brilliant with the special effects, and it was very, very light on visual effects, and it makes it kind of timeless.
I totally agree. I wish there was more of this, but even the stuff that they did do is really, really well made. So guy's arm getting eaten apart. What else? Dude getting his arm broken during the arm wrestling thing. Very effective, right? Real, gross stuff.
Watching Jeff Goldblum eat a donut
when he's
Brundle Fly.
That was actually going to be my intro. Hey, are those Krispy Kreme donuts? Here, we regurgitate on those for you.
That's disgusting.
Yes, that's terrible. I have that clip, actually. We'll enjoy that here shortly.
Excellent.
I tried to capture the magic of the gagging sound he made.
Yeah.
So a few things I want to just say right off the bat. Let's talk about the score. Howard Shore scored the film and is in top form here. I love the score. Yeah. This made me want it.
Yeah, 86. I was expecting more, you know, electric
synthesizer
kind of synthesized stuff, and I'm glad they didn't.
Yeah, it was good. Randy, I know you're a fan of film music. How'd you feel? I mean, Howard Shore, of course, probably most famous, at least recently, for the Lord of the Rings stuff.
Right. This is before Howard Shore really took off as a composer, in my opinion. This is real right down the middle.
Mm.
You could use the music from The Fly for practically anything, you know, lay it over an episode of any TV show that's a drama, and it sounds right at home, but it doesn't stand out for me. There's no strong theme. There's no love theme. There's no, there's no, you know, battle music, really.
I agree with you that there's nothing about it that's like amazing, but to me, it feels like I'm criticizing something that was made today. In other words, it didn't feel like a theme in 86. It felt like a theme now. While it would be average now, in 86, I think this may have been pretty stellar to my ears.
I feel like orchestral music is more timeless than anything. And if a theme was great, or if an entire score was great in the 60s, it's going to still be great. So I don't really look at the music that way. But I get what you're saying. I'm just saying Howard Shore got better than this.
I'll give you that.
You know. Yeah. He did get some nominations for the score for this film that year, didn't win anything, and I'm just saying that's as good as it gets. He did a lot better later.
Okay, fair enough. Skinny ties are back in this movie, so that was one sign that we were in the 80s.
And long hair.
Yeah, long hair and curly hair and all of those trappings are there, certainly, but I just thought the way it was filmed and the kind of film that it is or something feels really timeless. I didn't feel like they were trying to be too crazy with the computer stuff, although that voice-activated computer was kind of stupid.
It was useless. I mean, because when it stops working, it's like, oh, I'll just type in there manually.
Yeah.
Wasn't that the point? They needed to have a voice-activated computer so that you didn't have him typing all the damn time, like type, 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 type. It's horrible. And that makes it kind of, you know, new agey, sci-fi, postmodern.
Sure.
But then it has such a huge limitation. It doesn't make a difference.
Well, the coolest thing is the actual screen, the screens with the text on screen was totally not a computer. That stuff was all done through animatics and done outside of computer animation, which at the time was really crude and ugly. And this gave it a modern day, very modern feel to that computer display. And I thought that was really effective. And again, added to the sense I had that this movie works as well today as it did back then. Maybe better. That kind of stuff is cool. I really like that.
This movie reminds us that if you're going to make a film and you want it to be timeless, don't have any computer screens. Computer screens
or keyboards.
But keyboards are roughly the same as they were 20, 30, 40 years ago.
No, those things were bricks with brown keys on it.
Well, and it looked like it was built into the side of a Buick too, with the metal, whole metal casing and
just show computers. Period.
Right, yeah, but I get that. But the screens are where it really looks the worst.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's true. One thing that didn't feel timeless was their version of the 20th century intro. I'm just gonna play this real quick, so you can hear the difference.
Oh, no.
It's kind of bad. So here it is. Okay, I'm just saying. It sounds like.
Doesn't sound as good as the one we just heard at the beginning of the show.
The year is 1964. Right? Exactly. Doesn't seem to fit. But other than that, I just thought sound, audio, video, a lot less dubbing than most movies back then. Overdubbing, that is. There was a little, but not that much. And again, probably in the end, I think the strength of the film was Jeff Goldblum's performance.
Yeah.
He is awesome. And I've always been a fan. I've always liked him. I think he's great. I wish he was doing more. But I kind of realized, and we talked about this just briefly before the show, and let's just throw this around a little bit before we get to clips. Jeff Goldblum is doing the same character he does in every freaking thing he's ever been in, pretty much. So when he's doing his whole, you do it, Ibbett, you do a good impression. Do it.
Well, you've got to kind of shrug your shoulders as you're talking, and you reach out as you're emphasizing words that don't need to be emphasized, and then you kind of pull it back. And where was I? Oh yeah, you have to also stammer a lot. He's got a very calculated stammer.
It's a forced stutter. Yeah. It's like he's impersonating Mel Tillis.
Yeah, he sounded a little bit like Jimmy Stewart there.
Mary, you want me to reach up and get the moon for you?
Exactly. It's like the same guy.
I only have three impersonations, and apparently I use my Ernest Borgnine. So
plus the guy is just so tall and lean and just so ominous looking. There's just something about that guy.
Well, guys.
Yeah, there's no question why he was in movies. It's just striking. Yeah. He's not even a good looking person.
I said this beforehand, but if I ever make a movie, I swear I'm going to put Jeff Goldblum in the movie just so he can explain something, just so he can explain a technical part of the movie, you know, technical part of the plot, whatever. I just want him talking, and then he can, you know, he can go away for the rest of the movie if he wants. That's fine. As long as he's there for 5 minutes explaining how something works.
Well, he remains a high point of Jurassic Park, for example. Mm-hmm. He's the high point of lots of movies. I loved his role in Silverado, which is tiny and hardly there, but it was still great.
Independence Day, another
terrible movie with
another terrible movie with him explaining stuff.
Exactly, because he's good at that.
We're gonna put this virus into the spaceship.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome! You didn't do that when you were at Nerdtacular. We should have had you get up, which we just came back from, by the way. So hello, all the fans that came there that are listening now. They seem to like the show. They all seem to think the show is great. All right, let's play some clips. F all this talk. Well, we have more to say, but let's play some clips while we're doing it. First clip of the day comes to us from, let's see. Oh, we get to meet Jeff doing what Jeff does.
What am I working on? I'm working on something that'll change the world and human life as we know it.
Change it a lot or just a bit? You'll have to be more specific.
What, do you want me to be specific here in this room with half the scientific community of North America eavesdropping?
Is there another way?
You could come back to my lab. Listen, I'll make a cappuccino. I have a Fiamma of my very own. You know what that is? It's not the Dilettante's plastic kitchen model. It's one of those real restaurant espresso machines with an eagle on top. And
somehow I get the feeling you don't get out much.
Boobies!
So this clip is at a cocktail party to open the movie, but the movie actually opens with a shot of this cocktail party that's been filtered and filtered and filtered to the point that if you don't know what you're looking at, you have no idea what it is.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be like you're looking, like you're a fly and you're looking down on a cocktail party, and it slowly resolves itself. But instead, it's just awful. I mean, it's horrible. It looks nothing like what fly sight might like, what you might even imagine fly sight might look like. And it's like they got lost in what they were doing with it and just said, oh well, let's just drop some acid and trip on the opening.
So that's kind of what I thought it was just supposed to be dark and ominous and red. It wasn't hitting me that this was supposed to look.
It succeeded at that.
Yeah, it did. It succeeded greatly at that, but yeah, no, I didn't
feel like they were going for bug sight as much as I felt like they were going with like Jeff Goldblum. It felt like they were doing like this flies on trash kind of thing, like, you know what I mean, like a swarm of flies.
Right, you're looking at
swarm. Yeah, it was just like, you know, just like maybe you're just kind of halfway can see in all the trash, and it's like
maybe that was it.
Moving around, that's more how I felt it was. So I thought it was pretty effectual, but yeah.
my point is, it was a bad beginning, and then it jumps right into the middle of a conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it was like they had no way to start the movie.
Well, honestly, one of the things I think I liked about it was that they jumped right in, so they got right to the business. So yeah. He meets this girl, they talk a little bit. She says, "You may have seen me in Beetlejuice." He says, "Yeah, I hated that movie." Then they go back to his apartment and they get right to teleporting crap around. Like, it's immediate. There's none of this lead up. The old Fly was like almost the entire movie before anything exciting happened. This movie was like, nope, we're going right to it. We're going to get right home to those things. We're going to make a monkey turn the inside out. I mean, we're going to just go bananas immediately. And I like that. I thought that was great. I mean, I agree that it felt like they didn't have a beginning.
There was no foreplay at the beginning of the movie, and there was no cuddling after. As soon as, spoiler alert, Jeff Goldblum dies, they roll the credits. There's no, epilogue or anything.
I think my wife said, "What the hell?"
Did she?
I just started rolling.
Is that it?
There is no resolution. It's actually one of the things I like about the film.
Yeah.
The genie is out of the bottle is what I wrote here. And I think what it was is he was trying to explain to her that she couldn't talk about this. He just realized she was a reporter and not a fellow scientist.
I thought this was personal. You can't write about this.
What are you talking about? I'm a journalist.
Oh, no.
You knew that.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I made a mistake. I shouldn't have shown you this. I'm very, very sorry.
Listen, Particle Magazine sent me to that party to get a story.
Hold on. Particle Magazine. Can I just pause for a second? Particle Magazine.
No. You can't.
Particle Magazine. That's particle. Stupid. All right.
Did we mention also they mentioned later on Omni Magazine?
Yes, they did. But Particle's bullcrap.
Yeah, Particle is supposed to be the number one competitor to Omni.
Poor Particle Magazine, always second best. All right, here's the rest of that clip.
It's really tiny, too.
There's more.
And this is the most exciting thing I've ever seen.
No, absolutely not. In fact, I'm going to have to ask you for that tape, please.
You can't do that.
Don't you dare write a story. I'd never have told any of this stuff to a journalist.
But you did tell this stuff to a journalist.
Well, yeah, in a way, I suppose I did. That
sure did.
Oh, wait a minute.
I like how he's just sort of Jewishing around the place, doing that whole, like, oy vey, you can't take my thing. Zubba, zubba, zubba. I like his nervous little sort of skidding around thing is probably the best in the business in his prime. I like that. I can't think of who else does that now. Someone else is like this.
Albert Brooks does a great...
I don't mean Jewish, like, in a negative way.
No, but I'm saying, like, the the nervous kind of stammering, the nervous kind of...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who else, though?
I don't think Christopher Walken, I mean...
Yeah. Yeah, Walken.
Shia LaBeouf?
No.
You know what?
No.
Actually, that's pretty dead perfect. I think that is a good guy for that. He does that pretty well. No.
The new Fly.
Oh, yeah. I know. Like, Michael Cera does a great, kind of the nervous, the whole.
That's true.
There's got to be, is there a term for that? I was thinking today, I tweeted about this and everybody, I said, I want FilmSack to become this awesome site with like all the best trivia in the world about movies. And people wrote back, duh, imdb.com, where you been for a lot, like all this kind of like obnoxious talk. And what I meant was more like the show dissects a movie. Like we say, such Star Trek connections, and is there a cave that looks like a vagina or whatever. I want to see a site that's like really focused in on crazy little details. How do you categorize and describe that stammering dude? Like, what is that archetype? I would love to have a site like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, like TV tropes only for film sacks.
Yeah. Yeah. And have a whole site that's just focused on that sort of thing. It may just totally neutralize the show, but I'm just saying, be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Can't do living things yet. This is him talking about why he can't teleport monkeys.
He's not ready yet.
Seems to work okay.
No, something important's missing.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Which is?
I can only teleport inanimate objects.
Well, what happens when you try to teleport living things?
Not while we're eating.
Can't be worse than this. Listen, you're not doing a very good job of convincing me. I think the world should know about it now. And I think I should be the one to tell it.
You should tell it. But not yet. Look, what do you got so far?
But not yet. I just like the dialogue, so I captured that. Nothing terribly funny about it, but I just enjoy their the way those guys would talk. Brian Dunaway's right. They have nice chemistry, these two.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And if they're really married, it makes sense. Oh, honey, go ahead and show the side boob. It's not like I haven't seen it 500 times before. All right. Let's see. The size of his what?
Don't you get it? I am finally onto something that's big. Huge.
Yeah? What? His
beeps it out.
Very crude.
Too perfect to believe. You're a goddess. Thank you for making my most paranoid fantasies come true.
I don't have to report to you, you creep.
Ronnie, you've got to talk to me.
I don't have to do anything. We're finished, remember? I'll spend the night anywhere I damn well please.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm saying.
This is actually following one of my favorite scenes in the film where she comes home and finds him, or her ex-boyfriend, in her shower.
Yeah.
She's weird. Like, what are you doing here? And he says, I was just in the neighborhood. I felt scummy. Had a rough day. Decided to, you know, use the key you gave me and get in your shower and get naked. Why don't you get in here with me? And she, you know, she throws him out. But before she throws him out, she says, I need you to give me that key back. And he's like, nope, not going to do it.
Yeah.
I love that.
And then she says something like, all right, you want to leave or should I?
Yeah,
well, it's right, your friggin' apartment.
But like, he's not going to give her the key. Like, at least she could have said, well, I'll be changing the locks, you idiot. Like, you may as well give me the key and save me the trouble.
Yeah, guy's a big-time douche, for sure.
And the character name is Stathis Borans.
Yeah.
An anagram for something, or there's got to be some. I mean, who comes up with a character named Stathis Borans?
It sounds like a medical condition named after the guy who discovered it.
I think that character, if you've ever seen the DVD of The Fly, this version, you find out that there's more to his character than was actually showed in the film, and more to Geena Davis and his relationship.
Really? Because I would say that it, early on, it was a very two-dimensional kind of douchebag bearded guy, you know, that was just kind of creepy and couldn't get over her and became really obsessed. And to be honest, it'd been so long since I'd seen this, I couldn't remember how he panned out. I forgot in the end, he sort of, you know, heroed up a little bit.
He does, and he's kind of like, in some of the alternate endings, he's kind of he ends up being the survivor with her, so.
Well, he didn't die, and this one he didn't die either.
He didn't die either, but they never really said, you know, that they had any type of relationship.
Oh, all right. So maybe he went on to help take care of the fly baby or whatever?
Exactly. There was actually, there's alternate ending, there's not necessarily alternate ending, but deleted ending that they actually did get together, so this character kind of laid on the fringe of being a jerk to being somebody who really genuinely cared about her.
You sound so somber and serious about this relationship, Brian.
Yes. Well, you know.
They were close. Way
too
close.
They were close.
Yeah, he bugged me from the very get-go, and I think he was supposed to, obviously, and then as time went on, you sort of started to see that he was, you know, he was going to kind of change or whatever.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? Oh, I was going to mention this before we do our next clip. The whole movie's premise is based on this idea that if a fly gets into a chamber with you, your genetic code and the fly's genetic code merge and you become Flyman, right?
Yeah.
Or eventual Flyman.
Yeah.
Instead of the first movie, which was the fly flew around with the dude's head on it and the dude walked around with a fly head on it. So they just swapped body parts. This was a much more organic, maybe more realistic take, you know, in context of...
More realistic, yeah, in our day and age.
Sure.
One of our big fears was genetic manipulation, whereas in 58 it was more like just mutation, period, from radiation and that type of thing. So it would be more instantaneous.
Right.
And whereas now, like I said, we're merging things together.
So my point was that now that we understand microbiology a little bit better, any minute, like right this second as I breathe in, I just sucked in and killed like a trillion microorganisms. So there's way definitely more than just a fly in there.
Yeah, definitely a few.
Yeah, there's bacteria. Yeah. There's a freaking, right. He keeps going in there naked. He's probably got some crabs or something weird going on. Well,
and your body, in your body, you actually have, by cellular number, you actually have more non-human cells than human.
Right.
The number of microorganisms in your body right now outnumber you.
Yeah. So why wouldn't you come out?
Kind
like,
of freaking out a little bit right now, like, dude.
Right. But why wouldn't you come out with like a, you know, colon bacterial spore on your face or something?
Dust mite. Exactly. Dust mite groin or something.
Dust mite
because
groin.
That movie would be even more gross than this movie. I already couldn't eat for 2 hours after this stinking movie.
Oh, I ate while watching this film. I was like,
and you're the dude that was good. Earwig.
Dude, I told you, I explained that.
Yeah, that was a kid thing. We'll see, 86.
I must have a kid thing about nasty inside-out baboons because that was disgusting.
That was pretty gross.
You know what? I don't know if you're gonna have a bit from that part of the film, Scott.
I don't have one from the monkey, no.
But, you know, when he first shows Gina Davis's character, the attempted baboon, he's just like, I can't make it work. Let me show you. I'll kill this baboon. Yeah. And then the second time, the baboon, you know, he fixes all the problems. The baboon gets transported correctly. He opens the door. The baboon runs out and jumps into his arms, showing you that he has an actual relationship with the baboon.
Mm. Yes.
And they don't stop to ask, wait, did he have the same kind of relationship with the last baboon that he just so flippantly murdered?
Who was the brother? The brother of the other baboon. So,
And by the way, where is he keeping and caring for these baboons? I mean, it's not just like you could just have a baboon in the bathroom, you know?
Yeah, I think he goes to that farmer's market. You remember the one that took her to?
Oh, yeah.
I kept waiting for them to walk up to a stall and buy another baboon.
A baboon vendor in New York.
Yes. And while we're talking about crap that irritated me, the little things, it was the little things in this movie that done that. I was the same way. I was like, why didn't he use a cat? Could have been homage to the original, you know, he could get a cat anywhere, big freaking deal. Why does it have to be a freaking baboon? Anyway,
originally, according to the stuff I found, they had a cat originally and they changed it. Yeah. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. Where's it going?
I don't know.
Yeah. I was going with the jury thing. Don't set up rules in a movie if you're going to break them 5 seconds later.
Like what? Explain.
He said, give me something that is on you. And so for a very sexy part, she gave him a stocking. And she said that she didn't have any jewelry on her because she doesn't wear jewelry.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. Then, you know, when they're in the farmer's market, he's buying her jewelry. And I'm like, hello.
You don't listen very well.
I did not notice
my problem
that.
With that was he said, give me something that's like personal to you. And she pulls off a stocking, gives it to him because she doesn't have any jewelry. Then a few minutes later, she stuffs the stocking in her purse. And I'm like, you probably have a purse full of personal stuff. You didn't have to take off your clothes.
Oh, yeah.
You could have just reached in your purse. Look at all that stuff.
That was a weird
thing.
It was
a tease. Yeah, it was a tease. And that was fine. I was like, okay, so she's got like a chemistry going on with him. And so it's a tease. Cool. But like I said, with the jury, if you're going to set up a rule, don't break it 5 seconds later.
Okay, fair enough. But why not have a rule where he wears clothes in the thing? Because clothes obviously teleport just fine. You don't have to go in there naked.
He was like naked for half the movie. After he went through the teleporter thing, he was naked.
Yeah.
And they're getting more naked.
And they're squatting.
Kept getting more naked.
Gross me out.
Yeah. No, he's going to turn into Brundle pants.
I love they called him Brundlefly, or he called himself Brundlefly.
What does Brundlefly eat? What does Brundlefly eat?
What does Brundlefly eat?
How does Brundlefly eat? Yeah. How does Brundlefly...
Oh, sorry. All right. Let's play a clip about this douchebag again early in the film where he... I mean, I don't know why I never used this line on a girl, but check it out.
What about sex? Yeah, I'm not saying love or affection, just stress-relieving sex. You and me.
You're disgusting. As always.
Sweet, sweet pickup line, dude.
Yeah. Worst pickup line I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Amazing that didn't work.
I know. I can't understand it. I mean, she just walked out of the room. I thought she would stay. And
obviously, if you want to pick up on a woman and get her to go home and have sex with you that night, you have to break her boyfriend's arm while arm wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not just break it. Break the bone outside of the flesh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was nasty.
Theismann.
Yeah, total Joe Theismann. Player. That's what I thought of when I saw that. Yeah. Was anyone else? So, Ibbet, you saw that when you were a kid. Did you see the actual game when that happened?
No.
Yes.
No, I just kept seeing the footage afterwards.
I did. I saw the actual game, and then I remember them for the next 3 days replaying that footage over and
You're
over
not
and over.
You're not going to believe this.
And I kept thinking, is this really what you can do on TV? Just show this guy's leg break over and over? Like it's...
Yeah.
They began The Blind Side with like 5 shots of it over and over again.
Oh, I still
haven't
seen
it. The Blind Side with Sandra Bullock last year. Yeah, they showed that scene like 5 times.
Really? Mm-hmm. Is the movie dependent on Joe Theismann's broken leg somehow?
Because Blind Side was not protected.
Oh,
yeah. His Blind Side was not protected is basically what it was setting up.
Oh, yeah. Got it.
So in The Fly, this guy who decides to arm wrestle Brundlefly, he just needed Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, I did. Or Sammy Hagar to sing that over the top song.
Right, right. Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Remember that, Emmett? That was good times. Remember that song? You probably have it.
Yeah. Is that movie on Netflix? We need to watch that.
Over
movie.
The Over the Top. Oh.
It's love a that movie.
Sly Stallone arm wrestling movie. That's
awesome. Love that movie. When he goes over the top, he, you know, he brings his fingers up and he wraps him over the top of that guy's hand and oh, that's just so exciting.
It's ridiculous. Let's listen to intense version of Jeff.
Something went wrong.
No, not you. You're too chicken shit to be a member of the Dynamic Duo Club. Okay, then great. I'll find somebody else. Somebody who can keep up with me.
Seth, you have to listen to me.
You're afraid to dive into the plasma pool, aren't you? You're afraid to be destroyed, recreated, aren't you? I bet you think that you woke me up about the flesh, don't you? But you only know society's straight line about the flesh. You can't penetrate beyond society's sick, gray fear of the flesh. Drink deep or taste not the plasma spring. See what I'm saying? I'm not just talking about sex and penetration. I'm talking about penetration beyond the veil of the flesh. A deep, penetrating dive into the plasma pool.
Penetration.
And drink from the plasma fountain.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that, though, is a great example of why I like the movie. He is strangely intense. I think it's because he's so affable before all this. And he's so Jeff Goldblum with the whole thing like Ibbett was doing, where he's just sort of, and then you get to this part where he finally starts to lose his crap. And it's scary when people do that. Like if you know people in real life that are, they're sort of mild mannered and quiet, and suddenly they're really mad and the rage just takes their countenance over, you know, It's shocking and scary. And I think they use that as a real effective tool in this movie.
Yeah. Remember Gene Wilder from Chocolate Factory?
Yeah, dude.
The end of Willy Wonka. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, geez.
Kill the rabbit. I don't know why I just sang that. Why did I sing that? Oh, because they killed a rabbit in that, didn't they? They shot a rabbit in that. Yeah, that's right.
So now that he's merged with the fly,
right?
And it's starting to remake his entire existence. Hmm. She first realizes that he is a different person when the best scene in the film happens for me. My best scene in the film. And that is this fantastic use of a stunt double where if you aren't really paying close attention, Jeff Goldblum appears to be doing the most amazing gymnastics work on a horizontal bar
totally
that you'll ever see. And the way they edited it is just perfect to make that stunt double look like him.
Yeah.
And it was hard for me to tell the difference.
Yeah. We were all looking for it. We all have an eye for that. So I know we were all looking for that.
And but what you well ultimately does it for you is that Jeff Goldblum's 6'4", right. And there's no way somebody that tall could do that bend over thing you do.
Yeah.
So anyway, after you see that, like if you were a woman and the man that you had been sleeping with did that in front of you, you would jump up and pounce him to the ground. Like it's the most sexually charged thing ever. And instead, he ends up going on about penetration and plasma.
Yeah, I thought that was intense. I thought his whole like experimenting with him, his new physique and his strength was a fun part of the movie. And he's just so, it's something about that guy's face. I don't know, it's difficult to explain. Let's see. A few more bars first.
Let's go back to my place.
Your place? Yeah, well, okay. I live with my mother anyway. But can we go to maybe a few more bars first? I mean, it's a little too early to quit.
Sure, a few more bars.
Okay, I just wanted to, that was the worst scene in the movie, and I just wanted to play it.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't make sense. I mean, are they going to more bars to make some more money? Are they going...
Break some more arms?
I've only broken one arm tonight, hooker lady. Let's keep going. Yeah.
In other words, she's not that type of person until she's really drunk.
She grows
to go
me
home
out.
With somebody.
She grows me out.
What was the part her name was Tawny? Was that really blatant enough or what?
I don't know, dude. I just thought she was gross. Something about that girl grossed me out. Can't put my finger on it. Difficult to say why. Just something about her.
Well, she was not. Okay, we'll go ahead and say for people who haven't seen it, she's not an attractive lady. She just came from a seedy part of town. And I agree with you. You would not want to take this person home.
Yeah, and to take her home, he broke her boyfriend's arm to get her out of there.
Yeah, that's how he won her.
Or her boyfriends, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, whichever one won that contest was who she was going home with.
which is weird. Does that happen in bars? I mean, I don't go, so can I just throw the question out to the audience? When you go to a bar, is the way that you find girls who, is it you have to break a dude's arm or have a successful arm wrestle to get them out of there? Is that what we've come down
That's
to?
That's been my experience, yeah.
Wow.
That's how I got my wife.
Yeah, that's, wow. How I went home. That's how I went home with Jeff Goldblum once.
Wow. Nice.
And I'm taking the bald guy right there home with me.
I'm taking the bald guy. That's awesome. All right.
Now, you can't. I'm not a piece of property.
I captured the barf scene where he's eating donuts, and it's still pretty gross.
Why didn't they show us that barf scene? They showed us everything else. Why did that have to be off screen? We couldn't see the regurgitation on food. That would sick and gross us out too much, but we could see it on people's arms and legs.
We saw it earlier. The first time he ate something in front of Gina Davis.
That's true.
What did he eat the first time? What was that?
He just went, blah.
Yeah, he just went, blah, blah. Sorry.
Oh, that's disgusting.
All right, well, here's that scene. Check it out.
That's disgusting.
I did have to laugh about that, though, even though I was like, oh, God. Oh. And I was like, that's pretty funny.
Now, yeah, one of the best lines in the movie, too, right there.
Yeah, for sure. One of the most disgusting things I think they intended to be in the movie is when he was walking as the fly and sort of fighting her. And then he starts to tear apart and the true fly comes out.
Mm. Yeah.
Kind of cornball.
When he rips off his jawbone.
Yeah, that stuff. I mean, it was kind of gross. But then I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. How is all that stuff working just on top of this fly carapace underneath? Mm-hmm. Like, why don't I ask those questions in 1986, but I ask them now? What is it about my head? Have I seen too many movies? Have we come too far?
We've seen too many behind the scenes of movies so that they've revealed so much magic to us as the general consuming public.
Yeah.
Now we know all the tricks and we watch for them. So, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. What'd you guys think of that final stuff?
DVD has killed special effects for everybody.
What'd you guys think of the final fight with the gross flesh ripping off stuff? Did you guys think that held up? Because that was the most animatronic, puppetry.
It was totally pepperoni pizza kind of, melting.
What'd you think?
Marinara sauce.
I didn't get what you were asking, because I was going to say, what pisses me off about that whole scene is that it's yet another film where someone fails to shoot first and then marvel at your target later.
Mm.
You shoot first, and then you go stand over your target and go, oh, that's kind of weird looking. And so many movies have the person with the gun fail to do that and end up getting their hand melted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right,
and it melted like Indiana Jones melting, like the faces did. Yeah,
yeah,
which I liked. I liked that.
Yeah,
stuff
I liked it. Yeah. I thought it was fun. I think it was more appropriate here than the other because this was actually acid.
Seemed pretty intense, and it seemed like one of my favorite things is when she tries to he breaks out of the one thing so he can come get her to stop her from busting up all the equipment, and he gets teleported while he's halfway out the door, and it takes half the door and him to the next pod. And so once he's comes out is
fly pod.
Yeah, he's Brundle Metal Fly Man.
Fly pod, yes.
And then holding that gun to his head, I remember that being really effective in the final film back in 86. And I don't, and this time it kind of seemed puppy.
He was such a monster. It's like I didn't have any emotional attachments to him at all.
Yeah.
Unlike the original Fly where, I kind of have attachments to him. But this one, I'm kind of like, shoot him for Pete's sake, shoot the thing.
Yeah, and honestly, the ending of this movie is your stereotyped ending of any monster movie. They just went for the lowest common thing here. I'm not going to give them too much credit for this because maybe at the time this wasn't being done as much, but it seems like any movie with some creature or alien or horror dude in it, this is how it ends. A big fight at the end that's all bloody and over the top and action-oriented and not the smartest,
Yeah,
I don't know how you do it, but
it's the fly. I mean, saying that he can't kill himself. I mean, that is what made this one kind of different is that he's like, okay, put me out of my misery, just shoot me. And it's a lot like the original Fly where, Brian, how many cycles did the press run?
Two
cycles. But where he has to, he can't kill himself. So he has to have the woman in his life do it. And I thought that was, if it wasn't an intentional nod to the original,
yeah,
it was a great coincidence that they both happened to end like that.
Okay.
He finally gave up. He finally said, okay, fly and Brundle, not good.
Not good. Now it's fly, Brundle, door.
Pod, even worse.
Yeah, worse.
Please shoot me. Let's do another clip. This is, let's see. Actually, this is our last clip. This is a detailed description of how Brundle Fly eats.
How does Brundle Fly eat? Well, he found out the hard and painful way that he's very much the way a fly eats. His teeth are now useless because although he can chew up solid food, he can't digest it. Solid food hurts. So, like a fly, Brundle Fly breaks down solids with a corrosive enzyme, playfully called vomit drop. He regurgitates on his food, it liquefies, and then he sucks it back up. Ready for a demonstration, kids?
Ugh, no, I cut it there because that was gross. That grossed me out.
If nothing else, at least it'll be an interesting children's book.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Flip up book. Vomit drop, playfully called vomit drop. So I wonder though. This movie reminded me of when I'd see things that were gross. They were less gross when they showed them to me, and more gross when I couldn't see it. So when he did that demonstration on the video, and douchebag beard man was in there watching the video. Yeah. And you can only just see his face while you kind of heard the TV making noises. That was way grosser to me than seeing it.
So that was way grosser than him peeling his fingernails off.
Oh, that was gross. I forgot about that.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Or squeezing them into the mirror.
Juice out of him. Oh, my God.
That was gross.
That was so disgusting. After he peeled his fingernails off, and his fingers are all puffy, and he squeezes that juice out, and it's like a zit on the mirror.
Yeah,
it was just
foul. That was pretty foul. It was also very foul when his teeth are falling out, and he's just keeping them on his keyboard. That was gross.
Yeah, and you can tell Randy's a new dad because he's capable of handling that while eating.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Oh, right. Yeah,
just like poopy diaper in a while, and haven't had to deal with spit up. So it was probably all just another day in the life of Randy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, and I have a English cocker spaniel with a weak stomach.
So, oh yeah, perfect.
Was he watching it with you?
Any dog, he leaves the room and goes and pukes, makes you find it.
Yeah, right? What is that smell? Playfully, I don't know.
Playfully called dog puke.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, playfully.
Puke. Dog drop.
Dog drop.
Dog drop.
All right, I'll say this before we move on to our. Actually, you know what? Let's do our list now, and I'll bring it up in the rear. So let's do our checklist. I've added a few this time. Okay. I keep adding these. This will be the website one day. The Film Sack checklist. Did anyone barf? Oh, hells yes, they barfed.
Are you kidding me? Classic.
Goldblum did. Nobody else did. Was there a booby? Ibbot. Was there a booby?
There were side boobs.
Boobies.
Yes.
Really good. Right. Really good side. As good as side boobs get.
Every girl that was in this movie showed boobs.
Well, yeah. Actually, Tawny did when he was pulling her. And for whatever reason, she decided after they have sex, I'm just going to put on my jean jacket.
Again. Right. She had it on before, put it back on. Maybe she never took it off.
Yeah, she does. She does show a little bit more than Gina Davis did when he kind of pulls her forward. Something that I don't think...
You ain't got the talent that Gina Davis had. You have to,
yes. Side boob only. I don't think she's ever done anything like that before or after that. I think that was the most sort of exposure she's ever had. I think I'm not
I'll
totally
find
sure.
Out.
Yeah,
I'll find
yeah. Let me know, will you? Will you look for that? Good luck with that. Jerk. Here's a new one. Jerk character that has facial hair. Yes, I propose that every movie has a dude who's a jerk who has facial hair.
I can see that.
I mean, because you know right from the start when you see that guy's beard and mustache thing, that he is supposed to be the jerk.
Yeah, exactly. He's not some just nice coworker, you know, that's going to help her out. Although he does in the end, but still.
And it's usually the thin, well groomed beard mustache.
Yeah, I agree. By the way, that guy has gotten tons and tons of work in the following decades in TV and film. Yeah, he's done great stuff.
But when I first saw him watching this film, I thought, "Oh, look, Will Patton."
I did too, just a little bit.
In fact, I was surprised at first to slowly realize it wasn't Will Patton.
Yeah, or the guy from Ghostbusters, the redhead dude. That's yes, this man has no.
Oh, yeah,
that thing.
Yes,
and the one he was also in Die Hard. Hate that guy.
Yep. I hate that. By the way, Gina Davis only showing. Keister in the films Thelma Louise and The Long Kiss Goodnight, according to my sources.
According to my sources, aka the internet.
Yeah, I don't want to know who your sources are. Woo. Okay, stereotypes. Nerdy dudes and douche coworkers is the best I could come up with. So nerdy scientists. What else was there that I missed?
Stereotypes. Fly.
Oh, I mean, my gosh.
On. So typical.
Brutish jerks in bars.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's true. And just bars like that. That whole bar was a stereotype.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I was really confused at that part because I kept thinking they were talking about playing pool, and then they arm wrestled. And I was like, what? I thought he said he was going to beat him at pool.
Oh, did they? I kind of had that feeling too, but I thought I just heard it wrong. Maybe they screwed up. Wait about Cronenberg. Jeez.
Yeah.
Black guy dies first. There were no black people in the 80s.
Oh, au contraire. There is a black guy in the store when Gina Davis is buying the jacket
for Brundlefly. Right.
And she shows it to him and he just kind of shrugs his shoulders.
Oh, I thought he fell
over
and died.
That's true.
He didn't fall over and die. Shoot.
How was my scene? Yeah, no.
Decapitation. No, but sort of lots of lopped off body parts.
Oh, yeah. If you haven't seen the movie, as he transforms, he loses body parts and he places them in the medicine cabinet.
Dude, was his wiener in the medicine cabinet? Was that just
I think that was a thumb or something.
Yeah.
Okay. I worried about
like
that.
Like a Vienna sausage.
So he just put a sausage
that's
in
not,
there.
That's not part of that at all. Let me just
I got that when I saw that I thought, "Oh, please tell me one of those things is not a penis. Please." Don't want to see that. I kept wondering.
A fly has no use for.
Dude, you should go on the road with that voice. That do your like roaming Ibbot voice tour show, and one of them will be what was the one we talked about while you were here that everybody loved?
Ernest Borgnine.
Oh yeah, your Borgnine impression,
which is like was completely just on the spot, like imitating the clip we just heard.
Yeah, what was it? Give it to us again.
Hey, you got $70?
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. That's all it was.
That is so great. Star Trek Connection. Mel Brooks produced, who did Spaceballs, which was primarily about Star Wars, but had some Trek references in it. That's the best as I could do.
Jeez, yeah, really?
That is the best. I searched and searched. I couldn't make a better connection than that.
Yeah, it's close as I got. Someone peeing. That would seem silly in a movie like this. Wilhelm Scream.
Why would that seem silly in a movie like this?
I don't know, dude. It just seemed like, why would someone pee?
Because in all other movies, peeing is kind of gross. But in this film, it's just like, big deal.
Oh, yeah.
See a step up. I know it.
Yeah, it'd be like Easter morning in the spring or something.
I'll bet you ex-boyfriend Stathis Borans was peeing in the shower when Jimmy Davis came home.
That's why she flushed the toilet, actually, because he'd taken a leak and hadn't flushed for himself.
There you go.
She wasn't just trying to make him cold or hot. I guess hot. It would be hot. Wilhelm Scream. Didn't catch an actual Wilhelm, but there was some screaming going on.
A lot of screaming.
Bad guy with a theme song or sound. No, but I thought awesome theme throughout. I stand by it. I think it was good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they did too. I mean, it was a solid performance. It kept the movie going. So, yeah. I thought the score was all right.
Kenobi type. Only his beard. The douche. Because that's all that was left. There was no Kenobi types. Animal or robot as comedy relief. The fly. maybe the monkey, I guess.
The baboon was pretty good.
Yeah, he was all right.
I thought Jeff Goldblum was hilarious throughout the whole movie. I mean, even though he was the main character and it was very serious lots of times, he would take his situation and make a joke out of it.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. Animal or robot, though? What would he be?
No.
He'd be animal or robot?
Both. At the end, he was pod man, so.
Goldblum bot.
Yeah.
Kid named Billy Bobby Peter, or buddy. No, but she could name the larva one of those names when she has it.
Oh, there we go.
See?
Oh, yeah. What did, because that was the Eric Stoltz, like the sequel was Eric Stoltz, right? As the.
Yes.
Yes.
As Brundle's son.
Yes. Yeah, was that the story? See, I've never seen the second one and it's on streaming too. We should consider it, but I hear it's so freaking bad. I hear it is really, really bad. But I'm kind of curious now. I want to sort of see this through and see what happens.
We'll have to watch it.
Yeah. Let's see.
Even if we don't review it here, we'll have to watch it.
Okay. Finally, cave that looks like a vagina. I say man that looks like a vagina. How about that?
The thing I like. The pods kind of looked like when the doors open and something emerged from them. That's kind of vaginal.
Very birthy. Hmm. All that smoke. That's what I remember.
What'd you guys think about? I was trying to find homages in this movie to the throwbacks. Anytime we do a remake, maybe we should look for homages too.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that I really felt like.
I was trying to figure out, was the car that Gina Davis driving, was it French? Was it a French car? It looked very European.
I don't know. That's
don't
a
know.
Good point.
Don't know. And also, I noticed that the door that led into his loft where he stayed at was very heavy, and just like the other one, just like in the original Fly. Remember, he had the big heavy door.
They both had heavy doors. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, it was like it was basically essentially it felt like the same room because the entrance, the way it was set up.
Hey, Cronenberg, what are you doing there? I'm making this door so it's like that one in the 50s. That's possible, I suppose, but I didn't see too many other homages other than a dude turns into a fly and a fly turns into a dude.
I don't remember the guy in the original film getting all horned up and wanting to have sex with anything that moved, including
the
80s. Vincent Price probably would have.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, can you imagine?
Been on his radar.
All right, so there you go. Let's do our Twitter post. This is where you guys get to say 140 characters or less how you would sum up this film. The Fly, summed up by, let's start with Brian Ebbett.
All right. I feel stronger than ever. All my body parts are falling off. My fingers have grown freakishly long. Oh, wait. No, I'm Jeff Goldblum.
Nice. And Brian Dunaway. How about Ryan Bunaway?
Got What's that, that Steve?
Thanks, Steve. So don't eat anything 2 hours before or after the 1986 movie The Fly. Also, I like my animals inside out.
Yes. Throbbing. And inside out. That's the best way to eat it. That's how I like my meat. Rounding us up today, Randy Jordan, a.k.a. Randy Deluxe.
The Fly, 1986. A movie so disgusting that they ought to miniaturize it and put it in Walter Koenig's ear.
Yeah! Throwback. I likes the throwbacks. I now have
There's a Star Trek connection.
Indeed. Oh, I didn't even think about that. Randy created one. I like it better. Let's do what I do every week, which is sum up what we learned about this movie while you were out buying milk. Here we go. Don't teleport that steak. I'd rather eat it. I don't know why I wrote that, because I was hungry on it. That was weird. Sometimes he has to open the door by hand, and other times it opens on its own. Naked squatting Goldblum. Eek! don't mind the big ass hair, or not big ass hairs. Don't mind the big ass hairs growing out of your body. Not big ass hairs growing out of your body. I want that lab. I thought that lab was awesome when it wasn't douched up and messy. I'll just say douche a few more times this episode. In this movie, computer talk like Tonto. Do you notice that?
Yeah, this is true.
It was like no conjunctions, and it was like this really dumb
thing. Like Randy said, I understand why they did it, but it just seems so clunky and unnecessary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finally, don't hug sweaty fly man. And lastly, was his wiener in that medicine cabinet? I'm still not sure. That is what we learned while you stepped out. That is going to do it for another episode of this show. But before we leave, we do like to play something from Scott Fletcher. That's a quote from the film. And he says this.
There was an old lady who swallowed a fly. Perhaps she'll die. Cheeseburger.
I've already taken this
cheeseburger
bit and separate that out.
I've used it in every episode
from now on.
I used it on App Slap.
Forget boobies. Yeah. Let's use cheeseburger.
It makes me want to eat one.
Cheeseburger.
That sounds so good. Thank you, Scott Fletcher. Always good to hear from Scott Fletcher. He is the voice of FilmSack. That's going to do it for this episode, folks. Make sure you visit us on the web. That is FilmSack.com. The movie we'll be doing next week will be The Core, 2003's The Core. Many calling it the worst movie ever, The Core. So check with us next week. What? I know. I have things to say about that. So we'll find out then. Don't forget to send us some reviews on iTunes. We love those. 5-star reviews make us happy to do that at iTunes for the show. The email to send us feedback and comments and movie recommendations is filmsack@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/filmsack. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Randy, for Brian, and for Jeff Goldblum himself. Thank you so much. And we'll see you next time.
Bye now.
Aloha.
It's a freaking hoedown from Ibbot over there. Bye now.
Bye now.
Y'all take care now, you hear?
Ooh.
Oh, hey, Scott Johnson. Oh, would you like a grape?
No.
They're delicious. I'm feeding them to myself like a Greek god.
Weirdest thing you've ever said to me. Wow.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.